Hello there, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Monday, June 20th, 2011, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. Hey, happy solstice, everyone. Damn, where does the time go? It seems like only yesterday we were greeting the equinox. Well, you know what they say, time flies when you're having fun. And we're all about having fun here at DrDickSexAdvice.com, don't you know? And speaking of entertainment, Mr. Off the Chain himself, Eufetus Emery, is back with part two of our chat for this, the Erotic Mind series. But wait, you didn't miss part one of this delightful conversation, which appeared here last week at this time, did you? Well, not to worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, DrDickSexAdvice.com. All you got to do is use the search function in the header, type in podcast number 285, and voila! But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search. And Eufetus is just itching to share another selection of the fruit of his erotic mind. This week, like last, he will be reading from his oh-so-popular anthology, Off the Chain, Volume 2. Our guest tells us that we can find everything there is to find out about Eufetus Emery on the net by simply searching for, you guessed it, Eufetus Emery. But here's a tip, you'll find him on Facebook and Twitter too. Today's podcast is brought to you by the ideal sponsor for this series, Dr. Dick's Stockroom. You'll find this treasure trove of sexually stimulating toys, implements, and fetish wear and gear right there on the front page of DrDickSexAdvice.com. Look for the Dr. Dick's Stockroom banner in the sidebar of my site. You'll surely enjoy shopping at Dr. Dick's Stockroom because it's just so damn fun and, I might add, easy. Yesiree sex fans, you can spare yourself the embarrassment of skulking down to your local sex emporium to pick up all those nasty toys you've been drooling over. You can forget about seedy storefronts in unsavory neighborhoods, and you don't have to worry about leering salesmen scrutinizing what you buy. Why? Because you shop from the privacy of your own computer. Thanks to the Dr. Dick Stockroom, it's never been easier or more discreet to be a big fat pervert. Be sure to take a moment out of your hectic schedule and visit my stockroom today. You'll be so glad you did. Okay, on with the show. Eufetus, thanks for coming back to DrDickSexAdvice.com and joining us for this Erotic Mind podcast. I'm so excited that you're back because you are such an extraordinarily unique voice in this series. And I was just getting to the nub of things last week and when we had to break for the end of the show. So thanks for being back with us this week.
Good to be back. Thank you.
Good, good, good. So I'm going to pick up where we left off, and I'm going to ask more of my 20 questions, the little fiction that I created for getting to know you last week. So most of the erotica that I read is exceptionally brief, yet very powerful, and because of its brevity, every word must count. My question number 8 to you is, you generally write longer stuff, like novellas. So how do you build the tension, so to speak, in your works of art?
Well, I tell the entire story based on how it happens. So you get all of the foreplay leading up before the action, and then you get the tension once, you know, the parties meet, and then I give you fully explicit details when everything goes down. So that's why my stories are much longer than everyone else's out there, because I put much more detail into the work that I do.
That's cool. Defining erotic art is difficult since the perceptions of what is erotic and what is art fluctuate with time and culture. For example, the depiction of a phallus in some culture is not erotic, but merely a common symbol of potency and fertility. The same is true about words. Don't you agree?
I agree. Yeah, I mean, erotica to me is anything that turns you on.
Uh-huh. And do you have a sense that erotica is also culturally based? I mean, that, you know, what is erotic for one culture may not necessarily be erotic for others?
Very much so.
I see. Good. So, obviously, some words are also erotically charged than others, but even that is culturally and historically determined. That's your experience too, I'm assuming, yes?
Correct.
Okay. Can you give us an example of that? I mean, what a word that is popular now and has an erotic meaning that maybe didn't have one or didn't even exist before?
What jumps to my mind is punani. Punani within the African-American culture is a very powerful erotic word, whereas much other cultures would be like, okay, well, what the heck is that?
Yeah, that is so true. And, you know, and that harkens back to last week's story that you read for us. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. So, good.
Right.
So, question 9. Do you write for a particular audience? And if you do, do you tailor your stories or presentation for a female audience different from writing for a male audience?
Actually, I write for everyone, but but who gravitates towards my stories are women.
Uh-huh.
Not over 96% of my readers are women,
uh-huh.
and they just gravitate to my stories. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just because I put myself within them. And from a personal standpoint, I'm a male dom. I'm a sexual dominant. And women just, they love that.
I guess they do.
I mean, they want a guy to just walk up, throw him down, and take it.
Yeah. Well, certainly, a lot of women really like that, and even more women, even though they may not want that in their real life, they absolutely love the fantasy notion of it. So you
Correct.
Can fulfill, you know, both, yes?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I joke that, I wish I could take a poll of every woman that's masturbated to my books. Every woman that basically contacts me and says, oh, God, I love your work. I just love your work. And it's like, oh, where are you? Oh, well, normally I'm in the bed or I'm in the tub with my hand between my legs reading your work. You know, so every woman that reads my work tells me they masturbate to my work. I love it.
I love it. Good. Do they come on to you?
Only the boldest women out there would dare to say anything to me. Yeah, I mean, because, you know, like I said, I say what I like and how I like it,
uh-huh.
and the typical woman cannot hang.
Yeah, interesting. Wow. So I'm going to have to prevail upon you to read again from your work, will you?
Sure, I would love to.
Yay!
I'll read another excerpt out of Off the Chain Volume 2, and this is just, I'm going to show some of my humor in some of my books, and this is a story when you've just met Coco, and what I try to do in a lot of my books is I try to give advice to the guys as well as to women, and so this is some of the advice that I gave in this particular book. I'm going to share with you what graduates of the Mac Association call the 3-day principle. Every woman is only faithful as long as she is happy. I know what a lot of you are thinking right now. Eufdis, half of them don't know what they want or need in order to be happy. Exactly. The stupid men are scratching their heads right now because they don't understand the problem. Let me break it down for you. There is a very simple equation that breaks down what equates to happy for a woman. It's as follows. Happy equals getting whatever she wants when she wants it. The men reading this who do their women wrong or intentionally do shit to piss them off have probably resigned in their heads, if not their hearts, that their women are going to fuck around on them. If you didn't know, you know now. However, the monogamous, hard-working, take-care-of-home men are all cringing right now. You're cringing because you know that women, being women, at times want shit that is just fucking unrealistic. Happy equals getting whatever she wants when she wants it. When a real man is faced with a woman who makes an unrealistic demand, he is forced to put his foot down. And how hard you put your foot down, not giving your woman what she wants when she wants it, will determine how bad she will fuck around on you to get back at you. Now, on average, a woman will have her man on for up to 3 days before she cools off or her man makes amends. Depending on how bad you piss your woman off in that 3-day window, she will do one of the following. If you make her angry, she will smile affectionately when that flirtatious coworker bluntly tells her how good her ass looks in that new suit she's got on. If you make her mad, she will let someone take her to lunch for dinner, as Coco allowed me in this story. Heaven forbid if the guy who takes her out is smooth, because if he can finesse her out of the panties, she will give him the pussy. And if you piss her the fuck off, she will go looking for someone to fuck her brains out. But let's just say that you're one of those lucky few men out there who give his woman everything she wants. You're still fucked. I don't know if it's biorhythms, global warming, lunar eclipses, solar flares, or temporary planetary alignments. Things can be going smoothly and there can be nothing that your woman needs or wants, and she will still periodically lose her fucking mind for no good reason, leaving you no recourse but to check her ass hard. Okay, Euphtis, what are some things that I can say to her that will send her out the door looking for some dick? Great question. When you check your woman, if you start a sentence off with one of the following, your woman will fuck someone else to get back with you. It's going to be this way because I said so. I'm the man in this house. Saying nothing, just ignoring her ass completely as she rants. You don't know what the fuck you're. Just do what I tell you. Ho, didn't I? Look, bitch. Get the picture? Therefore, even in the best of relationships, your woman will fuck up on you a minimum of 1 to 3 times a year. Sorry, girls. Now, I know that there are still a few doubting Thomases out there. You're the ones grudgingly reading my book because you want to know what your woman's reading in the bed, skin all oiled up and perfumed up with a glass of wine in her hand, or in a hot bubble bath with scented candles around the tub. You're the one debating with your woman the veracity of my stories, just hating on Euphtis. Stories like Horny in the Mortar City. You tell your woman, this shit ain't true. No woman would let a man do some shit like this to them. Hey, yo. Did you ever stop to think why your woman takes my side in these debates? Because she is adamant that horny and stories like it are true, because she knows if she was pissed off enough with your ass, that she would do the same thing that girlfriend did in that story, who was, by the way, pissed off with her man. Hello? I'll just stop right there.
Well, I can see why people seek you out for, you know, sex wisdom, because it's right there. I love it. Absolutely love it.
I've been there. I mean, and that's true. I mean, if I had a dollar for every woman who gave something, she was mad at her man. Oh, my goodness.
So, another question that I have asked a lot of people in this series is that there seems to be a distinction between erotic art and erotica on the one hand and pornography on the other. All depict and describe the body, sensuality, sexuality, even lovemaking, but there seems to be a fundamental difference, or at least some people think so, between the two forms of expression. Do you think there is a difference? And if you do, where does the difference lie for you?
No, I view erotic. I mean, if you look at the definition of erotic, it's basically anything erotic that turns you on.
Right.
You know, so I look at my work as erotica, just like a romance work is erotica.
Right.
Just different people have different temperature gauge.
I see. Well, that's actually a good thing, because a lot of people in the series have also said, well, you know, everything is sex writing. You know, and you know, some is erotica sex writing, and some is romance sex writing, and some is pornographic. But you know, and those. That line is so blurry, and it all depends on, you know, one's personal taste, it would seem to me.
Right.
Has reading and writing enriched your sexual and sensual life? You mentioned this last week, and I wanted to get back to it, because you said that one of the things that launched your career as a writer was your therapy to get over a difficult divorce.
Correct.
And so this has liberated you some?
Oh, yeah. I mean, because I was, you know, I mean, I grew up, you know, raised that, you know, you sacrifice whatever for your marriage.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I did that. You know, but I did that with someone who didn't do the same thing for me.
Oh, I see.
And, you know, so I realized from that you know, out of that was that if you're truly in love with someone, that person's going to love you for who you are, everything about you, they're going to love you.
Right.
And if they don't, you don't need to be bothered with them.
Right.
And so that release from that marriage basically liberated me to the sense where, you know, I was like, hey, I don't care what society thinks. I don't care what the church thinks. I don't care what other people think. I'm going to be myself. I'm going to enjoy myself, and I'm going to have a good time.
Yeah.
And so that's what I do.
Huh. Did your role as a sexual dominant blossom at this time too, or was this part of your personality beforehand?
I've always been a sexual dom.
Ah.
I've always been a little twisted sexually. I have. You know, it's just, you know, once I accepted that, you know, then basically just, you know, I found out how deep I was into it.
Right. Okay. Good. So, since you used writing erotica therapeutically, Would you encourage other people to do the same thing, you know, to liberate, you know, their sexual desires or their sexual fantasies on paper or, you know, in a computer file?
It's funny because I write my books for, quote, the freaks that are out there, you know, the ones who are freaks and the ones who really don't know it. And I get so many, you know, emails from people who are like, oh, thank you. I never knew anybody else. There was as nasty as me. I'm okay.
Great.
So I think if you have it in, you go ahead and put it out there.
Right. Well. You know, since you talk about your erotica as reality-based, which is basically, as we talked about last week, nonfiction, the themes expressed in your writing must reflect your lifestyle, right?
Correct.
Good.
They did. Yes, exactly.
So question number 10 is, so there is no real need for you to get into character, so to speak?
No, not whatsoever. I just rehash the things that I've done.
Yeah. Do you find the need to get into the mind of your partners or the people that you write about?
Well, anyone that I've been with sexually, basically, it's not a hit and run thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, I have long term relationships,
right.
You know, with people, and I definitely get in their head. You know, I want full details
right.
of how they feel about me and how it is with them with other people.
Right. So that gives you plenty of fodder then for when you're writing. You don't have to imagine. You know, because you have evidence.
Exactly.
Basically. How interesting. Gosh. So today, erotic artists abound, and there is an abundance of amazingly good erotica out there. Although in some circles, this genre still is not accepted as mainstream. Has this been your experience? Has somebody, you know, ever criticized you for what you produce? You say that a lot of people write to you and tell you, you know, how fabulous your stuff is. Do people write in and say you're a terrible person and going to hell?
Well,
Because I want to go there with you, of course.
Well, when I put out my first two books, a lot of people compared me to the author Zane.
Uh-huh.
And there were a lot of Zane Zellots who did not like that at all.
Really?
And they basically, they gave me a lot of grief, you know, and they started calling my work porn. They were like, oh, well, if you like porn, yeah, you'll like Eufdis. You know, I mean, it was funny because they would review my work and they would try to put it down, and they really couldn't put it down. And so
on top of it, you know, if you call it that, you know, people are going to rush right over there and get it.
Right. You know, so once they started calling it porn, I was like, okay, I'm going to run with it. And so then that's when I start putting parental discretion advisory, you know, stickers on my books. You know, to basically say, yeah, my stuff is way out there, much more so than the rest of these people's stuff.
Well, that's just like, you know, putting the good housekeeping seal of approval.
Exactly.
You know, this is really nasty. This is really naughty. Beware. You know, just like, okay, I'll have that. I'll take that one.
and so now, you know, my following is so big, mm-hmm. those voices, they don't say anything anymore. You know, but now that I'm starting to cross over a little bit, you know, basically what I'm getting is different minority, different ethnic groups,
right,
they're reading my work, and they're kind of like giving me, you know, I'm starting to get some a lot of bad feedback from some of them, just because they don't need to pick it up in the first place because they don't like it.
Right.
Whereas, you know, other people, you know, in different groups, they're starting to pick up onto it. And so now, just like the Zane people were putting me down, there are other people in different minority groups who are starting to read my work and they're like, hey, this stuff is great. So it's starting to quiet down now.
Interesting. Last week you told us that you basically have two different personalities. Euphtus is your erotica personality, and then you have this other personality that obviously interacts with the rest of the world.
Right.
Has there been any bleed over or bleed through, you know, has somebody found you out or given you any grief?
Yeah, I got out.
Right?
I got outed recently at work.
Oh, bummer.
Which was, you know, somebody basically was, I think they went through my stuff and actually found out about my work, you know, but they had to shut up pretty quickly because I could have turned around and sued them for harassment.
Right.
So somebody put a bug in their ears like, hey, you better shut the heck up, you know. But since my writing is totally separate, you know, from me, there's nothing that, you know, anybody can do about that.
Right.
Because I didn't bring it up. They did.
Right. Is it possible for you to eroticize something you personally don't find particularly sexy?
Oh, no. I cannot do that at all.
Right.
No.
And again, that gets back to, you know, the constant theme that we've been going over and over throughout this interview, and that is that your stuff is real. It's not made up.
Right.
Right. That's cool. What do you look for in the work of others in terms of erotic art or erotica? You say that you review other people's erotica. What do you look for?
I look for, you know, good, excellent grammar, as well as it has to be nasty and it has to be real. You know, so if you're very expressive in your writing, if you express yourself well, and you know, I can tell that it, you know, you have some experience in what you're talking about, and it's very nasty. You can teach me something that I don't know.
Oh, cool.
Oh, I love authors to do that. Wow. One of my favorite authors is Fiona Zetta. I don't know if you're familiar with her. She's a lesbian. She's a black lesbian writer. Her books are on fire. I love her work.
Wow.
Because she's a lesbian, and you can tell she knows and likes what she does.
I absolutely love it. Well, maybe you'll turn her on to me, and we can do an interview with her as well. So who are your inspirations, and who are your sexual heroes, if you have any?
I would say Zane, just because she basically started it all and she's out there doing it. You know, my goal is always is to sell more books and to be bigger than her. That's been my goal ever since I came out. You know, so I would say just Zane.
What does the future hold for you and your work?
What I'm working on now is just building my readership.
Uh-huh.
So I want to, you know, basically just get to the point where I push that 1 million mark, books sold.
Wow.
You know, have them on every platform that's out there, as well as selling as many copies in the UK and Canada, you know.
Because they're smut mongers there too, don't you know?
Exactly. You got it.
There's some nasty folks in the UK, I can tell you.
Oh, yeah. They're oof.
And they do it with that wonderful accent.
I know.
Okay. You can tell me smutty stories all day long with that British accent. I love it.
So that's what I'm working on. It's
picking up money. Do you have any advice for the novice writer of erotica?
Just to get out there and do it. I mean, if you feel that you have a story to tell, just tell it.
Yeah.
You know, primarily you have to know how to write. I mean,
right.
You can't fake that.
Right.
You know, so if you don't know how, you need to take some classes. But if you have a story to tell, just get out there and tell it.
Because,
cool. You know, if you anything that you love, and you put it out there, somebody's going to love what you love.
Yeah.
And if you love it, they're going to buy your work.
Yeah. That's really good advice. Would you say that they should do it even if their stuff doesn't sell? Because it's a good thing. It's its own reward.
Yeah, you want it to sell.
No,
you know, I probably would. Yeah, I would stop writing if it didn't sell.
Oh,
But
okay.
yeah, I
I'll
mean,
get
that's
it.
just my take on it. But yeah, if you
Well,
have a story to tell, put it out there.
cool beans. And with that, sir, our time is up again this week. What a refreshing conversation. It's so great to meet you this way, and one day I hope to actually meet you in person because you sound like a ball of fun. So before we go, would you tell us how to find you on the internets?
Basically, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on MySpace, Facebook, and you can get my books at any bookstore that's out there. I'm on all of the ebook platforms, Sony, Barnes & Nobles, Amazon.com, as well as Kobo. If you have any questions and want to just find me and read about me and learn about me, just Google Euphtis. Everything. Blah, blah.
And that's true, ladies and gentlemen, in our audience, because he's got like the monopoly on that name. And
you got it.
And so, my friend, until we chat again, we will be visiting you in cyberspace. Thanks for spending so much time with us. We're the richer for the experience.
Thank you. I had a good time as always.
Okay. Bye, kiddo.
Bye.
Another terrific show. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week for more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Stockroom. Listen up, you guys. If your sex life needs a little sprucing up, and whose doesn't, I want you to mosey on over to my online sex emporium and pick out something really naughty for yourself or the other pervs in your life. I mean, if you can't find what you're looking for in my stockroom, you better call off the search right now. Dr. Dick has put together a dazzling array of products that will liven up even the most ho-hum sex life. But wait, unsure on what to buy? Take a look at my sex toy review site, Dr. Dick's sextoyreviews.com. It's chock full of swell gift-giving ideas. And look for the Dr. Dick Stockroom banner in the sidebar of my site. Say, would you like to become a sponsor for one or more of my sex advice podcasts? As you know, I plug a product or service at the beginning and end of each show, just like I'm doing now. Each podcast has its own posting on my site, along with the name of the podcast sponsor and the banner for the product or service. The beauty part of this unique opportunity is that once a sponsor's ad is included in a particular podcast, that sponsor is embedded there forever. Your sponsorship also underscores your social conscience. Your marketing dollars will not only go to promote your product, but you'll be able to do so by helping disseminate badly needed sex education and sexual enrichment messages. Simply put, you just can't get a better bang for your advertising buck. For further information, contact me through my site, drdicksexadvice.com. Until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.